Now, a signature. Vincent. For permission to photograph the paintings of Van Gogh, we wish to thank the following: the Art Institute of Chicago, Baltimore and Cleveland Museums of Art, the Detroit Institute of Arts, Glasgow Art Gallery and Museum, Courtauld Institute of Art, Honolulu Academy of Arts, Kunstmuseums of Basel and of Winterthur, Musée du Louvre, Musée Rodin, Musée des Beaux-Arts, the Museum of Fine Arts, the Museum of Modern Art, the Museau d'Art, the National Gallery of Scotland, Nassau Galleries Incorporated, National Gallery of Art, the Atkins Museum, the Phillips Collection, the Tate Gallery, Wildenstein Gallery, and Rhode Island School of Design. Now a logo appears of a thick-maned lion, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. In an oil painting, a huge sun hangs near the horizon. The shoot of a tree lies thin and black across the yellow circle, which is painted with thick brushstrokes. Over the fiery sun, titles appear in dark brushstroked letters. Kirk Douglas as Vincent Van Gogh in Lust for Life. Copyright 1956, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Co-starring Anthony Quinn as Paul Gauguin, with James Donald and Pamela Brown. Also with Everett Sloan, Niall McGuinness, Noel Purcell, Henry Danielle, Madge Kennedy, Jill Bennett, Jeanette Stirk, Lionel Jeffries, Lawrence Naismith, and Eric Pullman. Screenplay by Norman Corwin, based on the novel by Irving Stone. Music by Miklos Rocha. Titles continue. Directors of Photography, F.A. Young, A.S.C., and Russell Harlan, A.S.C. Color Consultant, Charles K. Hageden. Assistant Director, Al Jennings. Costumes by Walter Plunkett. Associate Producer, Judd Kinberg. Produced by John Houseman. Directed by Vincent Minnelli. Now, a sign on a door reads, The Belgian Committee, Messengers of the Faith.
You are now qualified for evangelical work. Under the auspices of the Belgian Committee of the Messengers of the Faith. May the Lord guide you and sustain you in all your ways.
In a dim library, four balding men sit behind a long table facing the open room. One committee member in spectacles crosses the room and shows five young men to the door. The young men bow to the committee, then file out. As the man in spectacles reaches to close the door, his gaze halts on a lone, red-bearded fellow seated in the hall. The committee man shuts the door and returns to the table.
Congratulations, Dr. Buckmar. A very creditable group of young men.
How about this other young man, Dr. Buckmar? Are you sure he's quite hopeless?
Gentlemen, I have trained a great many students in evangelical work, but never in my life have I come across a case quite like this.
He is completely unable to speak extempore. He prepares long and obscure sermons which he's unable to memorize and has to read like a stumbling and inarticulate child.
Now, gentlemen, can we send that kind of man out into the field to represent our society?
Dr. Peters, I think that's conclusive. Dr. Bachmeier, ask him to come in, please.
Dr. Bachmeier opens the door. He gives a nod to the red-bearded student in the hall, then takes his seat at the table. The student stands before the committee. Sweat gleams on his forehead.
Mr. Van Gogh, we have Dr. Bachmeier's report on your progress here. In view of what he's told us,
you understand, if your teacher feels that you're unqualified, this committee cannot give you an appointment.
We regret it more than we can say.
Well, gentlemen, I think that concludes committee business for today. Dr. Peters?
Van Gogh's dejected gaze drifts to the floor. As the committee men file out, one member lags behind. He wears a black suit and clerical collar.
Mr. Van Gogh, do you feel that the committee were unjust in their decision?
No, sir.
We did what we had to do in view of your records.
Yes, sir.
Come here.
Van Gogh nervously rubs a palm on his coat and approaches the clergyman.
Your father is a minister, is he not?
I'm not trying to put myself on a level with my father. I only hoped in some way to follow in his footsteps.
Yet until a year ago, you showed no inclination or desire to follow your father's calling.
Believe me, this is something I have to do. I want to help the unfortunates. I want to bring them the word of God. Even if I'm not qualified, there must be some way I can serve. Isn't there any place for me? Somewhere no one else wants to go. I'll do anything, only use me. Use me!
The clergyman gazes intently at Van Gogh.
Come here.
He leads the young man to a map and points to southwest Belgium.
Do you know this part of the country?
No.
It's a coal mining region, the Borinage. There exists no more miserable people on the face of the earth than the miners who live there. If you really mean what you said about wanting to help the unfortunates, here's your chance.
Now, under a sunless blue-gray sky, a landscape of coal mills, iron tramways, and dirt yards stretches to the horizon. A lone black smokestack towers over the drab buildings. In a cramped music hall, pale men, women, and children face Van Gogh, who reads a sermon.
The heart that seeks God has more storms than any others. Life is a struggle here below. Yet out of our sufferings, God teaches us higher things. He will.
Van Gogh smiles at a miner smoking a pipe.
He wills that man should live humbly and go through life not reaching after lofty aims, but fitting himself to the lowly and learning from the Gospels to be meek and simple of heart.
The miner wipes off his pipe, throws a rag on the floor, and walks out. Van Gogh awkwardly puts down his sermon.
Father, we pray to thee to keep us from evil and despair. Feed us with the bread that does not perish, which is thy word. O Lord, amen.
The crowd tramps out of the room. The women wear dingy shawls and kerchiefs, and the men stained vests and caps. Later, in an alley, Van Gogh races after the miner with the pipe.
Mister! Mister! I don't know what your name is, but...
De Krik.
Why did you leave? Did I say something wrong? I saw you leave. What did I say that offended you?
Just because it's Sunday, you don't expect us to listen to the kind of pious bilge you gave us just now?
Bilge? Look, I worked all week on that sermon. I meant every word of it.
Listen, mister. Every now and then somebody comes here from the outside and tries to help us. They mean well. So do you, probably. But that doesn't help us at all, does it?
I want to bring you the word of God. What can I do? Tell me.
Oh, I don't know.
Help me. Help me to understand you people, to know you. Take me into your homes where you live.
We don't live here. We only come here to sleep. Down there, 2,000 feet underground. That's where we live.
Can I go down? Take me. Will you take me down?
Sure. I can arrange it. Be here in the morning when I go to work. At 4 o'clock.
Now, massive pulley wheels rotate atop a tower. Van Gogh and the coal miner, De Krik, enter a crowded mill. Later, Van Gogh sits in a corroded elevator. It starts to descend. De Krik watches Van Gogh, squeezing his eyes shut.
I'm trembling inside of me just as much as you are. And I've been going down for 33 years.
Reaching a tunnel, the miner and Van Gogh step from the elevator. They hunch over as they carry lanterns into the low-ceilinged mines. Van Gogh scurries awkwardly past a miner and donkey. As he turns to watch them pass, 4 children wearing oversized work clothes jog by. Their faces are covered with coal dust. Later, the miner nods amiably at a youngster dragging a wooden beam.
How old is that child?
11.
How long has she been working here?
A year. Her father was killed in the explosion.
A shirtless boy climbs from a hole in the floor, his skinny frame gray with dust. Later, in his stately room, Van Gogh washes in front of a mirror.
Listen, mister. Every now and then somebody comes here from the outside and tries to help us. They mean well, so do you probably. But that doesn't help us at all, does it?
Van Gogh suddenly opens his armoire. Later, in a miner's one-room house, he puts one of his large dress shirts on a boy. A woman enters with a hooded bag dangling from her head. Van Gogh takes it from her. Later, he reads to children in the one-room house. Later still, a man feeds his bedridden wife. Van Gogh takes the woman's coal bag and gestures for her to remain in bed. Now, on a steep hill of ash-colored scree, dozens of women and children sift through rocks, occasionally putting pieces into bags tied around their waists. As one woman pulls a hooded bag to her head, Van Gogh paws through the rocks. Women jerk upright and all gaze downhill. Van Gogh watches as they hurry down the slope. In the slums, townspeople run down a narrow street. Dozens race through a massive iron gate to the coal yards. They arrive at a mill where soot-covered bodies have been laid out on tables. The women dash from body to body, checking each face. Bewildered, Van Gogh walks among them. Glimpsing a man's face, he stops short. He lays a hand under Crook's chest, then draws a blanket over his friend. Leaving the body behind, Van Gogh rubs his face. His jaw hangs open as he watches more women racing around. Staggering toward the elevator, he catches sight of a miner carrying two small boys, one under each arm. One boy, held around the waist, goes limp. His little back arches and his head drops. Van Gogh hurriedly cradles the child and places him on a stretcher.
Go down! Go down, somebody! Why don't you come down and bring them up?
Now a miner, glistening with black grime, climbs from the elevator shaft.
What are you waiting for?
The miner seizes a doctor and tries to pull him toward the elevator. As Van Gogh rushes over to calm him, the miner convulses and faints. Van Gogh carries him from the commotion. Later, Van Gogh and a miner walk to Van Gogh's shack. Black dust covers their torn clothes.
I've got a blanket in there for one of the wounded and some bread.
What about you?
Wait for me.
Inside, two clergymen wait. Sketches of workmen hang on the walls.
Van Gogh. I see you don't remember us. From the Committee of the Messengers of the Faith.
I'm so glad you've come. Did you bring food and clothes for the families?
Families?
Another accident.
You didn't know?
I'm sorry to hear it. Were there many lost?
Six. Four men, two children, 28 injured.
Terrible. We'll see what we can do. It's unfortunate that our visit should have come at this time. However, it was Reverend Peter's particular wish.
The purpose of our coming here is an inspection.
Excuse me, gentlemen, I'll be right back.
Van Gogh brings some bread and a blanket outside, then returns.
Mr. Van Gogh, just what is the meaning of this?
You receive an allowance. Why have you chosen to live in the most wretched, filthy shack in this village?
Because we have no right to spread the word of God to these people unless we suffer as they do.
You yourself are unclean. Your clothes are ragged and dirty.
There are people here who have no clothes at all.
Do you mean to tell us that you actually sleep on this dirt and straw like a beast of the field?
That's not...
You, the spiritual leader of the community?
I gave my bed to a sick woman who needed it more than I.
You are new in this work, Mr. Van Gogh. I have no doubt that you mean well, but the fact is that by your behavior you have degraded the dignity of the church whose representative you are.
Have you no sense of decency? Don't you understand that if the clergy is to be respected...
I don't care to be respected. I'm trying to live like a true Christian. Don't worry about how I sleep. Look at the fresh graves of the children in the cemetery. Scrub floors and pick coal with the women. Get those fine clothes dirty with the blood and sweat off dying miners. Then come here and lecture me about Christianity. Hypocrite! Hypocrite!
He glares through the open door as the clergymen go. Van Gogh hobbles away from the door and sits down heavily. His face seizes with grief. Later.
But you must have heard of him. He came here about a year ago as a preacher. Vincent Van Gogh.
Oh, Mr.
In the slums, a crowd listens to a bearded man wearing a fine suit. Later, he enters Van Gogh's shack.
Vincent.
Van Gogh sleeps in his clothes on a pile of straw. The middle-aged man leans his thin face close to Van Gogh's, then glances around the shabby room. Closing the door, he places an unlit oil lamp on a table strewn with books. As he lights the wick, the flames lend a soft glow to the corner of the room. The man rescans his surroundings, and his gaze lights on a charcoal sketch under several of the books. The drawing's dark shading and heavy lines show two hunched workers. On the wall, two more sketches show the slums and a woman laborer seated on a barrel. Van Gogh stirs awake.
Who is it?
It's Theo.
Van Gogh sits up.
Theo. Vincent.
What have you done to yourself?
What's happened to you?
I was sick for a while, but I'm all right now.
Well, doesn't anyone look after you? I'd better go and get you some food.
Don't go, Theo. Stay and talk.
Where's the nearest place where I...
Please don't go, Theo. It's been such a long time.
Taking Theo's arm in both hands, Van Gogh looks intently up at him. Theo returns the earnest gaze, then takes off his cape and hat.
Vincent, what are we going to do about you?
He sits and squarely faces Van Gogh.
Father wrote and asked me to come and find you. For months he's not heard from you.
There was nothing to tell.
Well, what right have you to decide that? Cut yourself off from everybody, even from me. You become a stranger. You've changed.
I haven't changed, Theo. Outwardly, perhaps, but inside me, I still want the same things.
What things?
The things we talked about in the old days. To be of use, to work, to bring something to the world.
Do you think this is the answer?
I don't know. You've grown apart, Theo. Look, you found what you want in Paris, and I'm glad for you. I've found nothing, anywhere. I've made one bad start after another, one mess after another. I thought I was on my way here by doing God's work, but that was the worst failure of all. But no matter how often I fail, there is something in me.
Loud, I am good for something. But this is not the way to find it.
Hiding away here, wasting your time. You become an idler. An idler? Yes. But there are two kinds of idlers. There's the man who's idle because he wants to be. Out of laziness, how easy that is. I envy him. But there's the other kind. The man who's idle in spite of himself. I want nothing but to work. Only I can't. I'm in a cage. A cage of shame and self-doubt and failure. Somebody, believe me. I'm caged. I'm alone. I'm frightened.
Theo's eyes fix on his brother. He taps Van Gogh's shoulder.
Vincent, listen to me. When we were children, I used to follow you about. If I was frightened, I'd run to look for you. If I got lost, you'd always come to find me. We're still brothers. We're friends. We can trust one another. That's stronger than any cage. Whatever you do from now on, wherever you go, promise me this. Make me part of it. Don't ever cut yourself off from me again.
Van Gogh shifts and glances around the room.
What is it?
My pipe.
Theo reaches for Van Gogh's pipe and packs it.
Let me take you home, where you can live and be cared for. Until you find your way.
He sets the pipe in Van Gogh's lips, then lights it. Later, in a lavish wood-paneled parlor, Theo shows two framed landscapes to a lady and gentleman.
Tell me, if you were me, which would you want to have your money in?
These are both accredited canvases. Both were exhibited in last year's salon. Perhaps you prefer to be left alone for a moment to make your choice. I should be in the next room.
Accepting an envelope from a servant, Theo steps from the parlor and shuts a set of double doors. He reads the letter.
Dear Theo, you were right. It's so good to be home,
to live in peace for a time. Once again, thanks to you, life seems precious to me. Something to be valued and loved. Once again, I'm working. You know how for years, whenever I saw anything that moved me, I felt the need to draw it, to get it down on paper, no matter how crudely. Now, for the first time, I've begun to wonder, could this be the way for me? A man or a woman at work, some furrows in a plowed field, a bit of sand, sea or sky. These are subjects so difficult and at the same time so beautiful that it's worth spending one's whole life trying to capture the poetry that's hidden in them.
Later, in his studio, Van Gogh takes off his sheepskin vest and crumples up a sketch. As he reviews his work, his blonde sister Wilhelmine enters wearing an ivory-colored dress.
Vincent, have you lost all track of time? Father's upset. We're practically through dinner.
You go ahead. I just want to finish this.
Couldn't you try to be on time just once in a while? Especially with Cousin Kay here.
Hmm?
She brought little Jan with her. And Vincent, try not to argue with Father. Not today.
Wearing a dark shirt and suspenders, he follows his sister out. They enter a posh dining room.
Sorry, I'm late.
He stares at a grinning brunette.
Vincent, aren't you going to say hello to your cousin Kay?
Hello, cousin.
They shake hands.
Hello, Kay.
Vincent resists letting go of her hand. Kay grins awkwardly.
You must pardon Vincent. He's so interested in his new work, he forgets where he is sometimes.
Vincent's an artist these days.
He draws on paper.
Oh, lovely things. Swamps and woods and people.
He's made a drawing of me. And he makes us all pose for him.
If you don't watch out, he'll make you pose too, Cousin Kay. And Jan. And you should see the way he makes people look.
Vincent, you're looking at me as though you'd never seen me before.
It's been a long time. Not since before Voss died. Well, I'm sorry. I guess I shouldn't have mentioned it. It's been almost a year.
Vincent.
One doesn't measure such things in weeks and months, Vincent.
Well, no, of course not. See, I only meant that... Well, I was going to write to you, Cousin Kay, but I'm not very good at those things. And well, then so much time went by that I...
Jan's being very quiet. I hope he's not getting up to any mischief. Excuse me.
Attired in black silk, Kay leaves the room. Van Gogh's parents scowl.
Vincent, really?
Couldn't you see how she felt? You know how it was with her and Voss?
But it's not right to grieve that long. God didn't intend the living to mourn forever.
I hardly think you're the best judge of God's intentions, Vincent. Do you realize you haven't been to church once since you got back? You, the minister's son. What do you think they're saying in the village?
I act out of my beliefs, Father, not because I want to please the village. I happen not to believe in the God of the clergyman. For me, he's as dead as a doornail.
Children, if you've finished, leave the table, please. Go into the other room.
Wilhelmine, in her late teens, shuffles out with her younger brother and sister.
Vincent, before the children, do you realize what you said?
Yes, Mother, but I must say what I feel. And I'm not an atheist. I do believe in God. A God of love, Father. And I believe there are many ways to serve him. One man does it from a pulpit, another through a book or a painting.
Let's not discuss it.
Van Gogh's father steps over to a desk. Van Gogh springs to his feet.
I'm sorry, Father, but I was just telling you my opinion.
Did you have a good morning in the fields, Vincent?
Like any other.
Do you feel the drawing's going well? You work so hard and... Well, I can't help noticing that you go over and over your drawings and often as not you throw them away.
What Mother means is, we'd hate to see you keep struggling, Vincent, only to realize in the end it was just another failure.
Maybe he could visit Cousin Mauve in The Hague. He's a successful artist. Ask him his opinion of your drawings. I'm sure he'd be glad to help you.
I'm not ready to show my work to Mauve. When I am, I'll go to him.
Cousin Kay returns. A gentle smile crosses her lips.
I'm sorry, Vincent.
How's Jan?
He's all right, thank you.
As she sits, Van Gogh watches her intently.
I'm glad you're here, Kay.
Later, in his studio.
Please, Theo, send more paper and drawing ink. I'm afraid I quickly used up what you sent last month. As I work at my drawings day after day, What seemed unattainable before is now gradually becoming possible. Slowly, I'm learning to observe and measure. I don't stand quite so helpless before nature any longer.
Through a window, Van Gogh sees Kay and others on the lawn.
Come on, Jan, you are slow.
Van Gogh's dimpled cheeks turn up in a grin, and he resumes drawing.
I know there's still something harsh and stiff in my style. Although, to tell the truth, I believe the presence of Kay here this summer is beginning to have a softening influence on my work.
Later, in a meadow, Van Gogh watches Kay play with Jan. She lays the boy down.
There. Oh, you go. Cover you up.
Oh. Pulling back her hair, she approaches Van Gogh. He hands her a hat.
He fell asleep almost as soon as I put him down. Thank you.
He's getting to be such a boy.
It's been a wonderful summer for him here.
It's been a wonderful summer.
How did it go today? Well?
You're with me, it always goes well.
I'm glad.
She looks at a sketch.
You work so hard.
They sit on a picnic blanket.
I've seen your light on often halfway through the night.
So much to learn, not only about drawing, but people. How they feel and think, the world they live in. Before you can paint them, you have to know that too. So I read everything I get my hands on. Dickens, Zola, Michelet. You know what Michelet says? Blessed is the man who's found his work and one woman to love. I need love, Kay.
Well, of course you do.
I need it to be myself, to be able to breathe. I want a home. I want children.
Kay stares off distantly.
Voss felt the same way. He made Jan and me the center of his existence. Nothing else counts.
Stop talking about Voss. He's dead. And we're alive, Kay. In the present. The present.
He grabs her.
I love you, Kay. No, listen to me. We're both alone in the world. We need each other. We'll have a home, Kay. We'll be happy. I promise you.
He kisses her. She pushes him off.
No.
Jan wakes up.
God's name, don't be frightened.
Jan.
I'm only saying I want to marry you. To be your husband and a father to Jan.
No. Never. Never.
No. Never. Never. I tell you, Theo, this thing threatens me.
Van Gogh rides a train.
Love is something so strong, so real, that it's as impossible to quench it as it is for a man to take his own life.
Now at a door.
I must see her face again and speak to her once more.
I'd like to see Miss Kay.
I'm afraid she's out, sir. No, sir, you can't go in now, sir. The family's at dinner.
Kay leaves the room before he enters.
He pushed his way in.
Well, Vincent, I see now what people mean when they complain about your bad manners.
Where's Kay?
She's not here. She's visiting friends.
Vincent, please sit down.
She was just sitting here. Can't you understand a simple word like no? Don't you realize what it meant when Kay returned your letters unopened?
May I speak to Kay, please?
My dear, will you leave us alone, please?
Kay's father opens a door and his wife leaves.
Must you persist in the face of everything? Try to be reasonable, Vincent. Even if Kay returned your love, how could you possibly hope to provide a home for her? You haven't earned money in a long time.
But don't even have a... loves, he lives. If he lives, he works. If he works, he has bread. You think I'm a tramp that I'll be penniless all my life?
No, just a question of the
listen
money.
Listen to me. All I ask is a chance to show Kay my love. To help her understand why she must love me. Surely you've been in love. You know what agonies a man can suffer.
Agonies? Are you such a weakling that you can't stand the little pain of a disappointment in love? Do you have to whimper about it?
What do you know about pain? I've seen agonies that you've never dreamed of.
Van Gogh holds his palm over a candle flame.
Let me talk to Kay for as long as I can keep my hand in this flame.
Kay's father grimaces, his eyes fixed on Van Gogh's hand over the flame.
Vincent!
As he blows out the candles, Kay's mother returns.
Have you gone out of your mind?
Do you hear me whimpering?
Listen to me, my boy. I'd let you talk to Kay to your heart's content, but for one thing. She refuses to see you again, ever.
I don't believe it.
She said that your persistence disgusted her. There are some things that can't be controlled by wishes. Love is one of them. I'm sorry.
But did she say I
disgusted him. Yes.
Van Gogh turns to Kay's mother.
Did she actually say that?
Yes.
Sweat gleams on Van Gogh's forehead and around his puffy, careworn eyes.
All right, I'm sorry, Dua. I'll be going.
Where are you staying? Would you like to spend the night here?
Thank you, but Kay leaves the house.
At least let me take care of your hand.
Take care of yourself, Vincent.
How about your family? Good night.
Good night, boy.
Later, a streetlight's reflection shimmers on dark water. Van Gogh leans on the railing of a bridge, staring at the river. Under his fiery, wide-eyed gaze, the reflections go blurry, and he leaves. Moping across a side street, he goes downstairs to a basement-level tavern. His undone collar and cravat dangle from his bandaged hand. Inside, grimy walls enclose the pub's scratched-up tables and chairs. A grungy woman nags a squeeze-box player as Van Gogh opens the door. Sitting, Van Gogh pulls out some money. The barkeep takes it, then swaggers to a disheveled woman at a neighboring table.
More wine?
On credit?
No.
The barkeep leaves her. The middle-aged woman draws her shawl close around her neck, then stands and doubles over. Groggily, she straightens. As she sits back down, the barkeep brings Van Gogh his drink and change. Van Gogh notices the woman resting her head on her hands.
You all right?
I'm sick. I'm tired. Just leave me alone.
Van Gogh gives her his drink.
Everything's rotten. Now I understand why people drown themselves.
Don't say things like that.
Why not?
Suicide's a terrible thing.
What do you know about it?
She lifts the glass to her plain-featured face and takes a sip.
What are you anyway, working man?
Yes.
Don't talk like one. Thanks for the brandy.
She downs another gulp.
I'm a laundress. When I have the strength to scrub, and when I haven't, I look for easier work.
She leers at Van Gogh.
I've a baby to feed. He's at home with my mother.
Where's your husband?
What husband? I've been at the tubs all day. They were supposed to pay me tonight, but they put me off till tomorrow.
Can't your mother help you?
She's helped plenty. She's taught me all I know. Can I have another?
Van Gogh picks up the coins on his table.
Here, put this in your pocket instead. I'm only sorry it isn't more.
Who bit your hand?
I burned it.
Let me see.
She unwraps the bandage and studies his dark palm.
What you trying to do? Fry it for dinner? I'll get something for it.
It'll be all right.
You got any oil or butter in this cockroach trap?
We sell drinks, not food.
It's a bad burn. Come home with me. I'll dress it for you before it gets worse.
Thank you, it'll heal.
What's the matter with you? You afraid to be seen with me?
She glares at him. Their gazes lock. Van Gogh gets up. He slowly steps around the table and pauses, allowing her to lead the way. As her shoulders turn toward the door, her eyes stay on him for a moment. Outside, they climb the stairs and walk side by side up the dim street.
This is a woman, Theo, who is far from young, far from pretty. But she was good to me and kind. She's evidently had a great deal of trouble and a hard life. And there's nothing at all distinguished or unusual about her. We talked about all sorts of things. Her life, her troubles, her poverty, her health, her loneliness.
Later, he holds Christine.
If you had nothing at all, it'd make no difference. Since you came over and talked to me, I don't feel alone anymore. Don't know how to say it.
The clergyman would call us sinners. Is it a sin to love, Theo? To be in need of love? Not to be able to live without love?
Daytime. In a richly furnished room, Van Gogh carries two portfolios toward a snoozing man with a bushy gray beard.
He doesn't move.
Oh, Vincent. I'm sorry to put off seeing you, but we artists have to be selfish, you know. We have to save ourselves. After all, with each painting, we die a little. What have you there?
I'm trying to draw. I was wondering if you'd be willing to help me. I wouldn't ask much, just let me watch your work now and then. And sometimes, when you're resting, if you look at my things and tell me my mistakes.
You think that's not asking much?
He flips through one portfolio.
But these are just copying exercises. Don't you have anything of your own?
Van Gogh opens the second portfolio.
Oh, you've been out of the beach at Scheveningen. Well, don't be in such a hurry. Seascapes are difficult. Yes, indeed.
Cousin Mauve freezes as he finds the dark sketches of workers. Sitting back, he strokes his mustache and regards Van Gogh.
You know, I expected to find you at Dullard. I was wrong. They're clumsy, most of them. But I can see what you're getting at. Kind of that you've worked.
Wearing a velvet jacket, Mauve gets a charcoal pencil and retouches one sketch.
Yes. Tell me something. What kind of an artist do you want to be?
I want to create things that touch people. I want to move them so they say he feels deeply and tenderly.
It's fine, fine. But before you can move people, you first have to learn your business. It needs skill as well as heart. Tell me something. Have you ever worked in color?
No.
Go on, you'd better start working right away in watercolors and oil. It will help your drawing.
I don't know the first thing about color.
I'll teach you. We'll work together here.
Cousin Mauve.
When I'm less tired.
Mauve approaches a table of supplies.
Now, you'll need some watercolors. Now, here they are. Some brushes. Some oil. No, this is an incomplete set, but it'll do for now. There's a palette knife, oil, turpentine. Better have a couple of these. And now, to improve your drawing, you'll need to use casts.
He gets a plaster hand and foot.
Yes. Now, take these home with you and see that you work from them not less than 3 hours each day, faithfully.
Yes, sir.
Have you a place to work?
Well, I found a flat near the market.
Has it got good light?
Well, I usually work out
now. How are you fixed for money?
Oh, no, Theo's been sending me money.
Well, it's always the first few months are the hardest. I don't suppose a little extra will be unwelcome, eh?
Cousin Mauve,
that will help you set yourself up.
Oh, I can't tell you how
good. Not at all. Now, come back next week. Let me see what you've done.
Well, please forgive me for barging in when you're so tired.
It's all right. Oh,
Mauve loads Van Gogh's arms with supplies.
I can't tell you how grateful
that's
I am.
That's all right. I'll take that.
He adds a plaster torso to the pile. Later, Christine sits cradling a baby.
How much longer do you need us?
Van Gogh sketches them.
I can't get supper ready sitting in this chair, you know.
Oh, sorry. You can get up now.
I'm going to market.
As she holds out her hand, Van Gogh pulls one coin from his pocket.
Next time, would you keep some money for food?
Christine sets the baby down on a rug.
If we could eat drawings, might it be different? I saved some money. You dropped it on the beach. I didn't give it back to you.
He hugs her.
My mother was right. Getting myself hooked up with a crazy painter. Keep an eye on him.
She leaves. Van Gogh puffs his pipe, then crouches down and makes kissing faces at the child. Smiling, he tickles the baby's chin.
Dear brother, I think of you so often, so very, very often these days. If only you could be here and see for yourself how it is with us. That this is a real home, rooted in life, with a woman and a cradle and a child's high chair. The feeling I have for Christine is real, too.
Van Gogh draws the cityscape outside his window. Christine's baby crawls near, and Van Gogh cuddles him. Later, on a beach, fishermen stow their nets, and Van Gogh paints a portrait of Christine. Strong winds buffet her cloak and skirt.
I'm tired. I'm going in to feed the baby.
As Van Gogh continues, Christine marches off.
Not yet. Christine, come back!
The wind takes his canvas. Later, frost builds up on the studio window.
I'm fed up. Month after month, it's the same thing.
What's the matter now?
I'm fed up with living on bread and coffee. You take every penny you're given and throw it away on paints and canvas.
Don't start that again.
Look at these. How much did they cost? Haven't even used up the old ones yet.
Shut up. Don't interfere with things you know nothing about.
I won't shut up. I have to pick up after you, mend those rags you call your clothes, pose for you for hours on top of everything else. What do you think I am, your slave?
Stop nagging.
Christine glances at him as he prepares a canvas.
Sometimes I wonder if I wasn't better off the way I was.
Van Gogh jumps up and shakes her.
Don't you dare. Do you hear me? Don't you dare.
Funny we could have a piece of meat once in a while. Or an egg. I'm sick of worrying every night how we're going to get money to eat the next day. If you call that a life.
He stares off morosely.
Couldn't you write to your brother?
I can't ask him again. He's helping all he can.
What about that man he wanted you to meet at the gallery?
Tiersty.
Maybe he could sell some of your stuff.
I went to see him. Offered me a handout like I was a beggar.
Didn't you take it?
Said I had no talent. Even if I did, I started too late.
Well, that leaves only your cousin Mauve. Couldn't he help?
Van Gogh holds his head.
Oh, did you have a fight with him, too? Did you?
Mauve can go to hell. Oh, he helps me when he's in the mood. The rest of the time, he doesn't care whether I'm dead or alive. Oh, I'm sorry, my boy. Go home. I can't see you now. Go home and work with those casts. I'm sorry, working with those idiotic casts.
Wait, don't look down your nose at those casts of his. He sells what he paints.
I don't want to hear about this.
Van Gogh hurls the plaster cast to the floor. Later, he reads a telegram. Father suffered stroke. Urgent, come home immediately, mother. A shadow stirs behind him and he turns around.
Jen?
Christine enters, holding the baby.
Where have you been? I ask you where you've been.
At my mother's.
For 2 days? You said you wouldn't go back.
There was something to eat for a change.
You promised not to get drawn into that life again.
And some jokes for a change.
He packs a coat into his bag.
Where are you going?
My father's ill. I have to go back.
Oh. How long have you been gone?
Depends on what happens.
Vincent, I...
Yes?
She looks away from him.
What is it?
Nothing.
Later, at a train station, Van Gogh smiles at the baby.
There's some painting muslin left in the cupboard. Make some shirts for the boy.
Vincent, I won't be there when you get back.
Don't say that.
I didn't want to tell you. I've been feeling restless. Besides, my mother's right what she said. You don't earn enough for me and the baby. It's a bad life.
This is no time for
You'll forget about us once you get home. It won't be hard.
Where will you go? How will you live?
It'll be the old life, I suppose. Vincent, it's not your fault. You've been good. You're the only person who's ever been good to me. And the baby. Just as if he was your own.
He takes the baby in his arms. As the train pulls away, he hands the child back and hops aboard, dashing into his third-class compartment. He peers out the window with a dark, wistful gaze as Christine grows distant and small. Later, in a church.
What is it that came between Father and me? Why couldn't I have shown him a little more consideration? Given him some pleasure while he was alive. It wouldn't have hurt me to come to his church once in a while.
We always assume there's time. And that we can give love on our own terms. Then one day we wake up and find it's too late to give it on any terms.
Theo walks the center aisle toward the altar.
Will you go back to your life in The Hague?
Now that's over. It was wrong from the beginning.
Come to Paris, Vincent. We could live together. You're not the only one that's lonely.
Not yet, Theo. Someday, but not now.
You could meet other painters. See what they're doing.
If I'm to be anything as a painter, I've got to break through the iron wall between what I feel and what I can express. And my best chance of doing it is here, where my roots are, with the people I know.
He stares at the pulpit.
The earth I know.
Later, Van Gogh wears his sheepskin vest as he sketches in a field with haystacks and a windmill.
Dear Theo, thank you for the money, the paints and canvas. With your help, I go forward. I feel the force to work growing daily within me. Do you realize, Theo, that what I'm doing is new? In the paintings of the old masters, did you ever see a single man or woman at work? Did they ever try to paint a laborer or a man digging? They didn't. And for good reason, because work is so hard to draw.
Later, by a church, exiting worshippers frown at Van Gogh. His sister Wilhelmine emerges. Her eyes shift uncomfortably.
And look at the way he's dressed. Oh, that old sheepskin.
Oh, my, I tell you, I'm sorry for the family.
To paint these people means to be with them in the fields day after day and by their firesides at night.
A painting shows a weaver at a loom.
Since the rains came, I've become absorbed in the weavers. They make such good subjects. The old oak wood darkened by sweating hands and the shadows of the looms on the gray mud walls.
A painting's harsh brush strokes show a stern woman in a bonnet.
All these months I've been trying to find a pattern, trying not so much to draw hands as gestures, not so much faces as the expressions of people, men and women who know the meaning of toil.
He sketches a family in a drab, stable-like room.
I want to make clear that these people, sitting round a meal of potatoes in the evening, have turned the soil with the very hands they put in the dish, that they have honestly earned their food. I want to paint something that smells of bacon smoke and steam, something that's the good dark color of our Dutch earth.
Later, in his studio.
Wilhelmine, come in. Come in. Here, sit down.
As he clears off a chair, she remains standing and stares distantly.
What's the matter? The neighbors been at you again?
You know how they are. It's such a small place.
What is it this time?
Well, it has to do with the way you dress partly and...
Look, I dress this way because I work in the fields. Because I have nothing else.
And the way you behave, too. They don't understand it. And it makes trouble for us. Ever since Father died, it hasn't been easy. People have stopped coming to the house. They avoid us. It isn't very comfortable.
Is your young man one of those who stopped coming?
Yes, he is, but that doesn't matter so much.
Yes, it does.
It's the rest of the family. Mother pretends she doesn't notice, but I know it's upset, and she... Well, she'll never tell you, so I felt I must.
I'll get out. It'll take a few days to finish this, and then I'll leave.
No, Vincent, I didn't mean that.
Of course you did, Wilhelmine. Oh, it's all right. I've accomplished what I stayed here to do, and maybe it is time to move on.
Now a sign. Exhibition of Impressionist paintings.
Cheap jokes. Art is a serious business, and in Paris at least, an artist with a new idea should be.
For once, I agree with you, Durand Ruel. Impressionism is not a joke. It's a cancer, and it must be cut out. Condone anarchism in the arts, and you seal the doom of France.
What would you do?
In a gallery, Van Gogh sees the work of Monet, Cezanne, Pissarro, and Renoir.
They load pistols with tubes of paint and fire them at the canvas.
A landscape shows a woman standing near slender, lacy trees. The stippled brushwork and pastel hues create an ethereal effect.
You know these men. You handle some of them. Why didn't you tell me about them?
Later, with Theo.
I wrote you in Antwerp. Don't you read my letters?
But seeing them, the colors, Theo, the colors, and what they've done with light. Is that painting?
Well, the critics and the public don't think so, nor do my employers and goofies.
I can't believe it. No, if they're right, then everything I've done is wrong. Theo, do they really know what they're doing?
Well, you've got to meet them, talk to them, see what they think they're doing. That's why I wanted you to come to Paris.
Yeah, I got to see them. Look, where can I meet them? I got so many questions.
At 2 o'clock in the morning.
Why not?
Listen, take that thing off and settle down.
Theo takes Van Gogh's sheepskin vest.
We've got to make a Parisian out of you. You'll have lots of time to get your answers.
Tomorrow we'll start with Pissarro.
It's the problem of translating light into the language of paint.
Those leaves there, if they were the only thing in sight, they'd have one color, their own. But the shade and reflection of everything around, the sky, the earth, the water, give them more than their own color. That's why when you paint from nature, don't fix your eye on any one spot. Take in everything at once. And above all, don't be timid. Trust your first impression.
Now, a series of landscapes. Trees with coppery dotted leaves stand out against a brilliant blue sky. Low buildings with fiery red roofs spread out below a factory's chimneys. Shops and inns, rendered in ivory and blue, taper into the distance.
Everything you've been doing, what we've all been doing, obsolete. The whole lot of us, guessing with every brushstroke, pouring rivers of paint into haphazard combinations, when actually everything we're after can be achieved mathematically.
Now, what are you talking about? Seurat again? You really think a painting can be done by formula?
Can be, is being done right here in Paris. Through precise scientific methods.
I don't mix my colors on canvas.
Later.
I mix them in the eye of the spectator.
Once you accept the phenomenon of the duration of light in the human retina...
Excuse me, but this is a sunlit exterior. Now, why do you paint it indoors by gaslight? I mean, how can you judge your colors?
By not.
Come on, Seurat. Put him out of his misery. I've tried, but he's still in darkness.
All right, Bernard. Come here.
Paint-filled cups cover a table.
Everything I do is worked out in advance, with mathematical accuracy through precise scientific methods. I know exactly what colors I'm going to use before I pick up my brushes, and my palette is methodically prepared in the order of the spectrum. As you see, blue, blue-violet, violet, violet-red, red, red-orange, orange-yellow, yellow, yellow.
Nighttime. In Theo's sitting room, Van Gogh tries Seurat's pointillistic style. Meticulously dabbing dots of paint onto a canvas, he creates a cafe scene. He pauses to look at the effect, then leans back in his chair and pitches his brush aside. He goes to a decanter and pours himself a drink. After a quick sip, he takes another look at his canvas, drains his glass, and strides to a nearby door.
Theo! Theo!
He pulls his brother out of bed.
Oh, can't just wait till morning.
No, please, I need your help.
Van Gogh helps Theo put on his robe, then brings him to the canvas.
What is it this time?
Look at this.
Theo studies the cafe scene.
Well? Yes, it's coming along. It's got a very good sense of light. What's the matter? You look terrible.
Would you be able to sell it?
Theo fastens his robe and begins to pace.
I'll try. It's hard to sell any of the new painters, even the ones with some sort of name. You know how Goupil begrudges me the little space I can get for him in the back room?
Then why don't you leave Goupil? Set up for yourself. Why waste time with idiots like that?
Vincent, don't tell me how to run my life. It's taken me a long time to get where I am. It may not be ideal, but to me, what I'm doing seems worthwhile. And you don't make it any easier. I haven't had any sleep for 6 months. When people come to the house, you insult them.
But don't I have a right to express my opinion?
This is my home. You have no right to insult my guests.
Van Gogh turns away from his brother and sits down.
Maybe I shouldn't have come to Paris in the first place.
Theo sinks into an armchair and runs a hand through his hair.
Vincent, all we've got is what we can give each other. You know how much joy it would give me to sell your paintings. I show them whenever I get a chance. But perhaps you should take some to some other dealer. The more your work seen, the better. Go to Père Tanguy. We'll talk to him about you. See what he can do for you. And show him some of your old work, not just the new stuff.
Oh, is that your way of saying a new work's no good?
Vincent, I'm not going to argue with you when you're in this mood.
What mood? All I'm trying
to do... Good night.
Theo!
Good night.
As he slams his bedroom door, a canvas falls off the wall. Theo returns.
Vincent, it's all good. All of it. The important thing is that one day it could be sublime. But between then and now, there's one thing you could do for me. A little thing. It's all I ask.
He hangs the fallen canvas.
Let me get a night's sleep.
Daytime. Bohemians loiter in an art supply shop.
Nothing's changed since I left here a year ago.
That's right. You owed us 112 francs then, and you still do.
Tanguy, remove your wife.
Get in the bag.
This man is absolutely correct, Tanguy. You cannot handle painters and woodpeckers, too. The fact is, my dear friends...
Van Gogh comes in.
...that you are not painters. You are a tattoo artist. You are a chemist with little pots of paint. You cover canvases with colored fleas. You are so busy imitating each other's tricks, you have forgotten what painting is about. You all make me sick.
What doesn't make you sick, Paul, besides your own work?
Would you really like to know?
Burly and mustached, Paul points to a wall of Asian paintings.
Look at that, the clarity, the calm. The Japanese paint as simply as we breathe.
Maybe they pay for their paints.
Paul Gauguin.
Do you have to go halfway around the world to find something you like?
I don't have to leave this shop. Look at that. Look at that. And that. And that.
Ha! Cézanne.
Yes,
Cézanne.
Yes,
Cézanne.
King of the unsalables.
I suppose you call this painting.
Give me that.
Van Gogh grabs a painting of his from a man who took it while he wasn't looking. As Gauguin reaches out, Van Gogh yields. The still life shows two old shoes.
Yes, it's direct, it's vigorous. What's your name?
Vincent Van Gogh.
He has a statement to make and he makes it. Theo's brother?
Yes.
Glad to know you. It's honest. It owes nothing to anybody. Nothing.
Because it has nothing. No tone, no values.
No color relationships.
Gauguin grins at Van Gogh.
My friend, will you join me in a drink?
What about the 112 francs?
Lady, yeah. Go back to your kitchen.
Later, they lounge in a park.
You see, down there the sun invades you, gets into your blood. Not that Martinique was a paradise. Between hunger and fever, I was lucky to get out alive. But if I could, I'd go back there tomorrow. How long have you been in Paris?
Over a year.
How can you stand it? I can't work here. It strangles me.
Well, where would you go?
Brittany. There's a place up there I can stay. It's just a hole, but it's all I can afford.
Wouldn't you miss your friends in Paris?
Friends? A woman or two, maybe. When you start as late as I did, you find yourself measuring who and what you give your time to. Friends, comforts, family. If they interfere with your peace to work, you'll cut them off. And you spend the rest of your life wondering if it was worthwhile.
Now, with Theo and his boss.
Why, well, said, if they're mad enough to buy impressionist paintings, it only proves that they're savages. I haven't seen the place looking so neat since Vincent came to stay here. What got into him, cleaning it up like this?
Theo finds a letter on the mantle.
I do hope he's out. Never get any business done if he's in.
The envelope leans against his brother's self-portrait. Theo opens it.
What is it?
From Vincent. Sorry for the trouble I've caused you and endlessly grateful for all your kindness. I've hung a few paintings to remind you of me.
He's gone?
He's on his way south to Arles in Provence. I've thought it over these past few weeks and decided the time's come to make a change. I want to see nature under a clearer sky. I have to work by myself for a while.
Well, no offense meant, but you'll be better off without him around your neck.
I think I'm the best judge of that.
No, the worst. You've been pushing his paintings, and every time you do that, we lose a customer. As your employer, I tell you for your own good. Your love for Vincent has blinded your judgment. It's affected your work.
Please don't let's wrangle again about that. I'll go on fighting for every good painter who deserves to be recognized, and Vincent is one of them.
He could be the best of them.
What?
You're his brother. You're emotional about him.
Oh, that has nothing to do with it.
Well, what is it when you brood about him? When you agonize over his every failure? When you support him to the point of denying yourself? You save every letter he wrote as though it were holy scripture. Oh, come now, Theo. Don't you really think you've done enough for him?
Theo levels his beady gaze.
How much is enough for a man who's struggling with himself the way Vincent is? Oh, I know he's crude and quarrelsome and excitable. But inside that tormented head of his, there's something wonderful. In those letters, there's a gifted man, a tender man. And there's far more passionate beauty and strength in his work than there is in half the stuff you see in the museums today. I wonder if there'll ever come a happy time for him.
seems impossible for him to have a quiet life.
The change may do him good. Maybe he'll find himself.
Or will he only find more loneliness?
Nighttime. Leaving a train station, Van Gogh totes his bags toward a flight of stairs. As a man whisks a small boy onto the banister, sliding him down, Van Gogh does the same with his baggage. Later, a balding fellow shows him to a cramped room.
This is it. But that it's worth more than you're willing to pay. Anything else?
No, thanks.
I'll be 8 francs for the week.
Van Gogh pays the man, who leaves. Smoking his pipe, Van Gogh pushes open the shutters of the room's only window and looks out into the darkness. Morning. On the bed, Van Gogh lies face down in his clothes. He stirs awake. Blinking his eyes, he sits up and groggily smacks his lips. Slivers of daylight filter in through the window's broken shutters. Van Gogh stands and nudges the shutters open. A fruit tree's white blossoms dapple his view, and a river carries fallen petals downstream. In an orchard, thousands of dark branches are lined with pink blooms. A flowering treetop stirs in a breeze. Pale light pours across fields. Now, in a painting of an orchard, the ground is orange and blue, and the flowering treetops are covered with gleaming white squiggles and dots. In another orchard landscape, thin branches, done in red, maroon, and lavender, angle up to a rich blue sky. A third landscape shows paint applied thickly in impastos. Orange shoots grow from a blue-gray trunk, which is outlined in black. In the background, a lone figure works amid pale yellow fruit trees and mint-green grass. In a fourth oil, the vertical stakes of a leaning fence contrast with a tree's tangled branches. Now at his easel, Van Gogh grins, pulls off his straw hat, and rubs his sweaty red hair. Later, his landlord grabs a painting.
Get these pictures out of here. I told you about
it
a week ago.
You fool, can't you see it's still wet?
Look, you're getting paint all over everything. That's why I raised your rent.
Well, you had no right to do it without telling me. And who ever heard of a storage fee for the use of a landing?
Then get your stuff out of here.
I will not.
Then pay me.
Van Gogh storms into his room. As his landlord gathers canvases, Van Gogh comes out glaring. The landlord puts the paintings down. Later, Van Gogh carries his things out to the street. As he drops a canvas, a ruddy-faced postman notices him. He goes over to help.
Allow me.
No, don't.
He picks up the canvas.
With your permission.
50-ish, the postman has a shaggy, chestnut-red beard.
Looks like you're moving.
I'm getting out of that help.
Here, I think you need some help.
That swine of a landlord.
Here you are. I wondered how long it stands him.
Now, at a busy square.
Where do you think you're going with all this stuff?
I don't know.
You're going to have to find some place before night. I'd ask you to stay with me, but it's a bit crowded with a wife and four kids. And
thanks, anyway, but...
How'd you like a house?
They gaze up ahead.
Too expensive.
Perhaps not. Come along. Let me do the talking. There's one thing I hate, it's landlord.
They approach a yellow two-story villa with green shutters where a portly man in an apron stands idle. The postman turns to Van Gogh.
Oh, come along. You wouldn't want a dump like that. Should have been pulled down years ago. Hey, wait a minute. What are you trying to do to me? Talking like that about my property. Is that what you're looking for, a house? Oh, this is a fine house. My sister lived in it for 17 years, and then she died, God bless
her. That's what I mean.
Would you like me to show it to you? And how long would you want it for?
You won't want it at all, not when you've seen it.
Now, look here, Ula, you mind your own business or I'll report you. I'll let you have it at a good price, too. Now, how would you feel like 15 a month, eh? You stay out of this. On top of that, I'll let you have the use of an extra room.
Roulon, the postman, watches them go inside.
A house, Theo. I found a house. A place of my own where I can work without trouble and where there's plenty of room.
Later, on a street, Van Gogh and Roulon happily carry furniture.
Roulon lent me a mattress to get started, and I bought some chairs and a bed and a few other things that were necessary. With this, and with what I've spent on paints and canvas, my money for the month is almost gone. But it was worth it.
A painting shows a shadowless bedroom brushed in thick impasto. An orange bed with red covers rests on a blue floor. The oil switches to Van Gogh's real bedroom.
Oh, Theo, you'd like this house. It's yellow on the outside and filled with sunshine. Later, two could live in it. One day, perhaps Gauguin will come. And then, who knows, this might turn into a colony of painters. I'm up at dawn and out on the road.
Wearing his paint case on his back, Van Gogh grabs a blank canvas and heads out.
Now that summer's begun, it's all very different here from what it was in the spring. But I love it even more. Everywhere is old gold, bronze, and copper.
Later, on a country road, Van Gogh pauses to admire three white-barked trees beside a vast field. Wearing loose clothes and a straw hat, he winds his way along hillside paths and up rocky bluffs. Later, he uses brush and ink hatching to sketch a tended field.
I wish you could see these lovely days here, Theo. But if not, you shall see pictures of them, for these colors give me an extraordinary exaltation. The whole earth is glowing under the southern sun. Lemon yellow, sulfur yellow, greenish yellow, all under a sky blanched with heat. What a country it is. It absorbs me so much that I let myself go, never thinking of a single rule. I have no doubts, no limitations. I'm working like a steam engine, devouring paints, burning up canvases. Whole days go by without my speaking to anyone. And every day my concentration becomes more intense, my hand more sure. I have a power of color in me that I never had before, a sense of breadth and strength.
Returning home, Van Gogh passes a regiment of Zouave riflemen dressed in baggy crimson trousers, dark jackets, and white boots. In the evening, two altar boys and a priest tramp over dead leaves as Van Gogh arrives at his villa. Remaining outside, he studies a canvas. A golden field of hatch marks sprawls under a blue sky. A dark horizon of roofs, turrets, and factory chimneys separates them. Van Gogh sighs. Later, fierce winds buffet the trees outside his window and throw open the shutter. Van Gogh pulls it closed.
The summer has vanished in a fever of work, and now the mistral is blowing. Always the wind, restless and unceasing, sweeping among the dead leaves in a rage, so that I'm forced to remain indoors. Now and then, when the storm inside me gets too loud, I take a glass too much to distract me.
Now, in a busy, smoke-filled salon, Van Gogh sits at a table with a swarthy, black-haired woman.
I must watch out for my nerves. I'm getting haggard, I know. If I go on this way, some day or other there may be a crisis. Yet I can't stop.
Now, he paints outside in the dark with a ring of lit candles on his hat.
Sometimes I work on into the night. I'm hardly conscious of myself anymore. And the pictures come to me as in a dream with a terrible lucidity.
A painting shows a seaside town at night. In a sky of heavy blue brushwork, stars glow like fireworks. The town's lights cast jittery orange paths across the water. A couple strolls near two moored boats. Now Van Gogh dozes in a cafe bar. A barkeep sets a bottle down beside his head. As Van Gogh stirs, the man saunters toward a pool table at the room's center. The walls are bright red, and hanging glass-domed lanterns give off sallow light. The barkeep takes a shot with a cue stick. At his table, Van Gogh rubs his eyes and pours himself a drink. As he swallows, his face clenches with the burn of the liquor. His eyes survey the smoky room. As the barkeep continues his game, Van Gogh makes a sickly grimace. He gazes upward. The metal housings and wire frames of two hanging lanterns are curvy and abstract. Van Gogh glowers at his empty glass and drops his head. Later, Roulin swaggers into the cafe. Overlooking Van Gogh's table, he turns to leave. On the way out, he spots Van Gogh face down at his table, then approaches the barkeep.
What time did you get here?
About 4 this morning. As usual, 2 coffees, 3 absinthes.
Did you eat anything?
What do you think?
Roland checks on Van Gogh.
Ah, good morning.
Oh, morning, man.
I've got something for you. From your brother.
What I want to know is when do I get paid? I don't mind carrying for a day or two, but this time it's over 2 weeks. I must be as crazy as he is. What do you think this is, a reading room?
As the barkeep folds his arms, several banknotes drop from the just-delivered letter in Van Gogh's hands.
What's he owe?
13.
Well, here's 10. Shut up. Now, here, let me give you a hand. Come along.
Roulin stuffs the rest of the money in Van Gogh's pocket, and the two men head out onto the street.
Where were you painting last night? We were looking for you everywhere, all over the place. Couldn't find you.
Theo's leaving.
What?
No, it's good news. He's getting married.
That's wonderful. Let's go right back and celebrate.
They stop. Van Gogh grins uneasily, then walks away from the cafe.
Do you know the girl?
She's a Dutch girl. He's going to Holland this weekend to meet her family. Well, Mother will be happy. She's always wanted one of us to get married and...
Well, when you write your brother, wish him well from me and my family.
Oh, yes, yes, I will. Thank you.
Now, in a cozy parlor, Theo reads a letter to his wife.
But this doesn't mean that I don't wish you both happiness with all my heart. With your wife, you won't be lonely anymore. Your house won't be empty.
He must be so alone down there. You two have always been so close. Is there anything we can do, Theo, to help him?
I wish I knew. If only I could sell something of his, just one, that'd be a help. Heaven knows I've tried. He asks about Gauguin again, too. He wants me to persuade him to go down there.
Gauguin?
It might work. When they were here last winter, they seemed to get on. Vincent was one of the few people Paul didn't attack. Perhaps if they were together, if Vincent could have someone with him to whom he could pour out his heart. Another painter.
Do you think Gauguin would do it?
He might. I'd have to send him some money. Enough to pay his debts in Brittany and get him down to Arles. It could be the solution for both of them.
Nighttime. At the train station in Arles, the burly Paul Gauguin carries his bags down a corridor stairwell. Reaching the street, he stops to watch a short businessman pass by, fighting a strong gust. Gauguin turns his leathery, mustached face into the wind, then strides off. Later, he enters Van Gogh's villa. He wears bright red pants, a beret, and a dark vest with silver buttons. Glancing around, he wanders down the front hall.
Vincent! Vincent!
Paul!
Van Gogh hugs Gauguin.
You're here. You're really here.
Yes, I am.
You're a day early. Theo told me you wouldn't come here. Let me take these things. Come up. Come on up, Paul. You have trouble finding the place? Oh, your painting things are here in some canvases. They arrived the day before yesterday.
Oh, I fixed this room up for you.
Gauguin ambles into a long bedroom adjacent to Van Gogh's. Inside it, impasto paintings of okra and yellow sunflowers hang on the walls. A double bed, washstand, bureau, and chairs sit neatly arranged.
It's very nice.
Gauguin touches one of the paintings. It shows a stout vase stuffed with weighty blooms. Some flowers are fat rings, others drooping, ragged circles of petals.
I painted them for you.
Well, that's very friendly of you, Vincent.
As Gauguin runs his fingers over another painting, Van Gogh's eyes twinkle. He takes a few eager steps toward Gauguin.
It's very friendly.
Have you had anything to eat? Come on downstairs. I've got something on the stove.
I can't wait to see the thing you did in Brittany.
Well, I think you'll be interested.
Where you wrote about it.
I may have hit something there.
I never quite got before.
Sounds wonderful. It was all I could do to keep from opening them up and looking at them.
Gauguin furrows his brow and lags behind Van Gogh as they head into the kitchen. Van Gogh takes a pot off the fire.
Be ready in just a minute.
Take your time.
Gauguin gapes as he notices dozens of paintings leaned up against walls and chairs and spread out on a table. Van Gogh's bedroom, a ladder-backed chair, a farmer in a field, and a man dressed in yellow. A painting of the night cafe with red walls shows the barkeep beside the pool table and the otherworldly lanterns glowing above.
Well, I see you've been working.
That's not difficult in this part of the world. I can't tell you, Paul. You'll see for yourself. In the morning, you open the window. See, there's the green of the garden. Wait till you see the yellow fields at noon under the full sun. And the light. You wouldn't believe it. All the time. These yellows are really here. Everywhere you look, there's something to paint. For what an artist like you will do out here. We'll go out this afternoon.
Wait a minute. I'm not one of those painters that gets off the train and turns out a sunlight effect before he's even unpacked his bags.
Paul, show me the Brittany paintings, huh?
Oh, there's plenty of time for that. Come on, let's see.
All right.
Picking up a steaming iron pot, Van Gogh pours bean stew into a bowl. Gauguin lifts it to his nose.
A little heavy on the turpentine, isn't it? What'd you do, boil some old paint tubes?
No.
Vincent, from now on, you better let me do the cooking.
All right. No, even my worst enemies won't deny me that talent.
Gauguin scoffs at the room.
Vincent, do you really have to live like this?
Well, what do you mean?
Well, look at it. How can you stand it? Look at those paints and those brushes. How can you work this way? It's a mess.
Well, I've been so
busy. Look,
if
we're going to live together, might as well start right. Come on, let's get this place in some kind of order.
Show me the paintings, will you?
That can wait. There's one thing I can't stand. It's confusion, mental or physical.
As Gauguin consolidates bowls of supplies, Van Gogh accidentally dumps his tubes of paint onto the floor. Later, Gauguin mounts a tin box to the wall, then picks up some cash.
Now, this will have to last us till the 1st. After that, everything Theo sends us every month, your allowance, his advance of my paintings, goes into this box. Anything we spend, we write down. So much for food, so much for drink, for tobacco, and other relaxation. That way, there'll be no more starving at the end of each month. Understood?
Understood. I still can't believe you're here. You know, before you came here, I was a little frightened. I've been alone so long that... I hope you two will find what you want here, Paul. A chance to create in peace. You know, this could be just the beginning. We could get other painters here. Make a colony of it, a studio of the South, with you at its head.
A father superior?
As its guiding force. I thought maybe we'd ask Bernard and Lautrec, only he'd never leave Paris. And Signac.
Well, haven't you heard? I've dismissed Mr. Signac from the legion of my devoted admirers. He bores me.
Say, what about Guillemin and Seurat?
You know what I think of Seurat.
He's so ill. This place would do him good.
Wouldn't do me good. I don't want that kind of painting around me.
Vincent, I've just spent a year beating my brains out. I sacrificed everything. Execution, effect, all the things that come easiest to me were a style. A style that'll convey the mood of what I see. The idea, without regard for concrete reality.
Well, what do you paint, then?
What's in my head. Art's an abstraction, not a picture book. A painting is a flat surface covered with lines and colors arranged in certain order.
Yeah, but Theo, Paul, what about the arrangements that exist in nature?
I choose to disregard nature. When I'm after harmonies, harmonies of pure color, deliberately composed and carefully calculated, that move you as music moves.
Oh, but then you deny the greatest artists of all, Rembrandt, Rubens, Delacroix, Millet.
Millet? That calendar artist with his dun-colored tones and sentimental insipidity.
How dare you say that? Millet's one of the few artists that ever really captured the human spirit. Yeah, and the dignity of toil. Millet uses paint to express the word of God.
Well, then he should have been a preacher, not a painter. If there's one thing I despise, it's emotionalism in painting. Vincent, painting is for painters.
Like your friend Degas, I suppose, who's done nothing but ballet dancers and racehorses for the last 10 years.
You can learn something from him. You can learn control.
I don't want control. I'm not afraid of emotion. When I paint the sun, I want to make people feel it revolving, giving off light and heat. When I paint a peasant in the field, I want to feel the sun pouring into him like it does in the corn.
Is that what you think you're doing when you overload your brush? When you slap paint on like putty? When you make your trees writhe like snakes and your sun explode all over the canvas? With all your talk of emotion, what I see when I look at your work is just that you paint too fast.
You look too fast!
Whatever you say, Brigadier.
Gauguin slowly paces away.
Maybe you're right.
Setting his pipe in his mouth, he smiles.
Maybe we need another drink.
As Gauguin returns to his chair, Van Gogh tops off his friend's glass of wine.
I'm sorry, Paul.
He gives Gauguin a squeeze on the shoulder. Later, at a streetside cafe, they drink pale green absinthe liqueur.
Look, Paul, when I painted the night cafe, I tried to show evil, the most violent passions of humanity. I painted it blood red, dark yellow, and a green billiard table in the middle. Four lemon yellow lamps in a glare of orange and green. In an atmosphere of pale sulfur, like a furnace, I tried to show a place where a man can ruin himself, go mad, commit a crime.
On the tabletop, Van Gogh sketches one of the abstract lanterns in chalk.
What's all this talk about Elysian women? I haven't seen a good one yet.
They must have heard you were coming and they locked them up.
Yeah.
Ah, wait till you see, Paul. There's something about them. The way they carry themselves, even the old ones, a certain classic grace and dignity.
Dignity? I'm talking about women, man, women. I like them fat and vicious and not too smart. Nothing spiritual either. To have to say I love you would break my teeth. I don't want to be loved.
You really mean that, Paul?
Let's get out of here. Show me the rest of the town.
Van Gogh drops some coins on the table. Later, on a narrow back street, Gauguin puts a cigarette between his lips and tries to strike a match on a wall. Van Gogh holds out his lit pipe, and Gauguin lights up with it. A Zouave soldier passes them, tickling a woman's cleavage. Up ahead, a man runs from a doorway. As he bolts, a brawling soldier and workman crash out through the door's beaded curtain.
You didn't tell me the ballet was in town?
Another soldier comes out. Gauguin cold cocks him, then pulls the workman off the first soldier.
Wait a minute. You're tired.
Gauguin, his cigarette still in his lips, holds the flailing soldier's head down, pushes him back along the alley, and shoves him.
That's more like it. Now the town's coming to life.
Inside, a man shakes a woman.
Oh, come on, stop it. Stop it. Get her out of there.
He points at Gauguin.
And you. I don't want him in trouble in this place, see?
Gauguin eyes him blankly, and the man tramps off. As Gauguin swaggers away, checking out the floozy women, Van Gogh lags behind. He approaches a Zouave soldier.
I told the captain I won't return until tomorrow.
Hello,
Vincent, my friend.
A hand grabs Van Gogh's arm. It's the swarthy woman.
Hello, redhead. Where have you been?
Hello, Rachel.
I thought you must have gone away.
Oh, I've been working.
What's the matter?
Hi.
Do you like me anymore?
Hi, Adrian.
My friend's come to town. I've been getting the place ready for him.
That tough.
He's a painter, like me.
As Rachel hangs a bangle on Van Gogh's ear, Gauguin spots a painting of a nude.
He's not like you, redhead.
Hey, Vincent! Look, a masterpiece, direct from the salon.
Same.
Symbolism. Better send it to Theo before the Louvre grabs it.
Paul, this is Rachel.
Rachel sulks as Gauguin sits down with them.
Vincent, why do I do it? Now, here I pride myself on my sense of logic and order, and inside I'm a savage. I have this attraction to violence.
violence makes me sick. Mm. You know, I have too much inside me. I'm afraid of it.
That's why I let it out before it hurts me.
Last winter, Martinique, I got into a fight with some sailors. I was in the hospital for a month. But it was worth it. Even that piddling brawl out there made me feel better than I have in weeks. And I know why. Because suddenly there's something in front of you. Something you can hit at. He stands there, you smash his teeth in, or he does it to you. Either way, it's all right. There's a decision.
He turns to a waiter.
Two absinthe. But the wait, three absinthe.
Later, at the villa, Gauguin traipses upstairs with Van Gogh slung over his shoulder. As he enters Van Gogh's bedroom, the red-haired painter comes to. Gauguin flops him onto the bed.
Is everything all right?
Yes, Brigadier.
Van Gogh sleeps. Later.
Dear Theo, I'm so happy to have Gauguin here. Not to be alone anymore. It's of tremendous value to me to see him work. He's a very great artist and a good friend.
Paul!
They paint by a stream.
Doesn't seem to work. Doesn't work. Paul, could you come over and take
a
look?
I'm trying to catch this light.
I remember what you said. I soften my colors. I try to control them. Then I lose everything.
Go back and try again.
That's what I mean. You see how pale and thin that sky is? You use the same brush strokes all over. It's got no texture, no energy. It's all flat.
That's the way I see it. Flat.
They glare at each other, standing inches apart.
We argue, of course, mainly about painting. And our arguments are so electric that I come out of them often with my brain tired. Like a run-down battery.
Now, in the kitchen, fierce winds throw open a window. Van Gogh latches it, then paces, fidgeting with his smock. An unfinished self-portrait rests on his easel. Nearby, Gauguin paints a windy garden scene.
What are you nervous about?
Should be out there working. Look at that sunlight.
Yeah, listen to that wind.
Wind doesn't show in his painting. What about it?
I'm doing fine right here. Or I would be if you'd only like someplace.
I'm tired of being cooped up here.
I heard you to work inside for once. Use your imagination, invent.
Then why should I invent here? Nature does it so much better out there.
What then? Who's stopping you?
Later, in a blustery vineyard, Gauguin sketches peasant women harvesting grapes. His painting case flips over. As he picks it up, a gust topples his easel. When he pulls the easel upright, one loose hinged leg gives. He throws the whole thing down in a fury and turns to Van Gogh. Van Gogh hammers a wooden stake to a cart. An autumn-colored painting shakes on his easel.
This is ridiculous! I can't work like this!
Tie down your easel!
No wonder they call you crazy around here! Come on, Vincent, let's get out of here! Give it up! You can't paint in this scale!
I've done it plenty of times!
Yes, and I've seen the results. I'm going back. I'm sick of all this. The sun burns the eyes out of your head. The stinking mistral blows you to pieces. I'm sick of this whole miserable countryside. And that house, too. I don't know what I'm doing here or why I ever came.
That's the way you feel, then why don't you leave?
You want to know why? Because I haven't got the money.
Gauguin storms off. Later, at the villa, Van Gogh scoots inside and a flurry of dead leaves blows down the hall. Walking cautiously, he passes an envelope on a table. A closed door draws his attention. As Gauguin works a mortar and pestle in the kitchen, Van Gogh takes the envelope from the hall and joins his friend. Glancing apprehensively at Gauguin, Van Gogh opens the envelope.
Our money. Theo.
No.
Van Gogh goes to the money tin on the wall. Looking in Gauguin's direction, he places a wad of bills into the tin. On the stove, he finds a pot over a fire. He glances at Gauguin again and grins. The smile fades.
Can I pour you a drink, Paul?
No, thanks.
Gauguin stares downward, his pipe clenched in his lips, as he grinds the pestle against the stone bowl. Van Gogh anxiously pours a drink.
Paul, see, all the way home, I kept thinking of...
Gauguin whacks the bowl.
I wondered, Paul, if only we'd tried a little, if we'd made some effort to remain friends, if it wouldn't have been better for both of us.
I see you finished it.
But yet, because of Paul, when you look back, so much of life is wasted in loneliness. There's not one of us that doesn't need friends. Companionship. Attachments.
I can do without attachments. I've learned to avoid them.
Well, how can you say that, Paul? I mean, even you have your family. Did you ever think of them? Your children. You see them so seldom.
Mind your own business.
Oh, Paul. All I mean is that you too must have times when you have a terrible...
Why don't you shut up? If you have to slobber, don't do it over me. You'll have no trouble finding subjects. You mourn over a pair of old shoes. You cry when you read Uncle Tom's Cabin. You plead with Millay over the nobility of toil. For weeks I've been listening to that slop and I'm tired of it. What do you know about toil? When have you done a stroke of manual labor in your life? Well, I have. I've dug ditches in the stinking heat of the tropics. I worked in the docks in weather so cold my hands froze to the ropes. And I can tell you there's nothing noble or beautiful about it. I did it so I could go on painting. I didn't have a brother to support me.
Van Gogh hurls his glass. Gauguin levels his dark gaze on Van Gogh and strides over, closing the distance between them.
Don't ever do that again.
Paul, where are you going?
I'm getting out of here before one of us gets killed.
Don't go,
I'll be back with my things in the morning.
Please don't go, Paul. If you only know how lonely I was before you came here.
I know all about loneliness. Only I don't whine about it.
Gauguin pushes Van Gogh aside and leaves. Slowly, Van Gogh lifts his sweaty red face. His lips are tight and his face stiffens into a malevolent gaze. Later, on the back street by the salon, Gauguin marches under a stone archway. An alley cat scampers out of his way. As he reaches an intersection, he pauses to listen. Van Gogh runs into the light holding a long razor. Away, Gauguin warily faces Van Gogh, Paul's cheek and eye pinched together in disbelief. Van Gogh's chest heaves and he lowers his sparkling eyes. Sluggishly, he turns away from Gauguin and staggers off. Gauguin walks away in disgust. Van Gogh stops and gazes at a gas street lantern. As he hobbles off, the image of the lantern grows blurry and switches to a fiery orange lantern from his painting of the night cafe. It fades, revealing a hanging oil lamp at the villa. Van Gogh creeps up to it, his head bowed. His neck cranes back, and his eyes, ringed with sweat, open wide at the flame. Leaning on a bureau, he presses his face into his arm. The razor, still clutched in his hand, gleams in the light. Van Gogh looks in a mirror and clenches his teeth. Grimacing wildly, he rests his forehead against the mirror. He paws at his head, squeezing tightly with his knuckles, then lopes away from the mirror's sweat-smudged glass. In a smeared reflection, the oil lamp hangs inches above the painting of the night cafe. In the mirror, Van Gogh staggers into view, holding his hand up to the left side of his head. Blood trails down his fingers. Later, a man in a suit idly slides a coin across a table spread with some of Van Gogh's things, including his razor and pipe. As Gauguin enters, a guard stops him.
What's your name?
Gauguin.
Gauguin glances at the inspector, then freezes as he finds a bloody smear by the doorway to Van Gogh's bedroom.
Your friend is in there. Dying.
Gauguin slowly enters the bedroom. Van Gogh lies unconscious on his stomach, a blood-soaked bandage over his left temple. Gauguin kneels at his side and clutches his friend's shoulder. As the inspector comes in, Gauguin stands.
Why haven't you sent for the doctor?
There's one on the way.
What happened?
His ear's been slashed off.
Stern-faced, Gauguin steps into his own room.
What went on last night?
I don't know. I wasn't here.
You live here. Why did you leave? Did you two have a fight?
Inspector!
Look,
the doctor is here.
The inspector leaves Gauguin.
Inspector.
Right this way, doctor.
A top-hatted man approaches Van Gogh.
When did you find him?
About an hour ago.
Has he been conscious at all?
Not at all.
In his adjoining room, Gauguin packs a bag. The doctor checks Van Gogh's wound.
It's a wonder he didn't bleed to death.
Self-inflicted, doctor?
Looks that way.
What do you think, doc?
Well, don't worry. You won't have a corpse on your hand. The thing is to get
Gauguin it cauterized. Listens in, glancing at the sunflower painting over his bed.
Water and towels, please. By the way, sir.
Gauguin faces the inspector.
You might as well know. That man's unbalanced.
Don't take my word for it. Ask anyone around. Last night he got worse. Just my being here seemed to drive him out of his mind. If I'm here when he comes to and he sees me after all that's happened, it could be fatal to him. Will you need me for anything more? No, I guess not. I'll notify his brother.
Gauguin takes his packed bags and heads out. In the hall, he watches the guard return with a bowl of water and some towels, then leaves. Later, at night, a crowd gathers outside Van Gogh's villa. The postman, Brulin, peers down from an open window in the second floor, then closes the shutters. The townspeople remain. Brulin steps out the front door and faces them.
What do you want here? There's nothing better to do than hang around cussing up the square? Why don't you go home and leave the man alone? He's sick, and he needs rest!
Brulin marches off. As the townspeople shout toward the shuttered window, Van Gogh opens his eyes. A boy outside climbs a drain pipe and bangs on the shutters. Van Gogh stares at the window. The boy pulls the shutters open and tries to peer through the curtains. Van Gogh sits up. A white compress bulges off the side of his head. As he opens the window, the boy retreats hastily down the pipe. Van Gogh peers out over a sea of laughing faces.
Come on, Redhead!
Leave me alone!
Van Gogh wags his head violently. The grinning men, women, and children tug on their own ears. Staggering, Van Gogh turns away from them. He stumbles past his bed and collapses. Now, in a hospital ward, beds lie neatly spaced along the walls. Patients nap and read in view of a cross at the head of the room. A priest wearing a doctor's coat leads Theo into the ward. The clergyman points to a bed in one corner. Theo's concerned gaze steadies on it. He approaches and finds Van Gogh covering his face with both hands. Theo pulls up a chair.
Vincent. I've just been with Dr. Ray. You're doing very well. Quite soon now, you'll be able to travel. Johanna and I
Theo.
Want you to...
I want to have myself committed. I want to go to an asylum. I have to, Theo. One more of these attacks could leave me helpless, like a crab on its back. Unable even to do away with myself.
Vincent... You can come and live with us in Paris and have a reasonable life. We'll see that none of this ever happens again.
How, Theo? Will you and Johanna take turns watching me? Make sure the symptoms aren't coming back. When your baby's born, I'm a danger to others.
I'm a danger to myself. Believe me, I'll be better off in an asylum.
Vincent, don't. You must think like that.
Find a place for me to go. Please.
Van Gogh takes Theo's hand.
Don't be sad. It won't be for long. Just long enough for me to find a little order in my life. A little peace.
Theo goes to speak, then stops. He closes his mouth and stares downward. Later, on a sunny train platform, Van Gogh and Roulin the postman face each other. They hug as Theo boards the train. Van Gogh climbs into the third-class coach and looks out the window. Roulin waves goodbye. Later, on a dusty road, leggy pine trees loom over a coach as it rolls along the gravel. Inside it, Theo jostles in his seat. Van Gogh leans out the window. The driver stops the coach beside an old manor surrounded by a stone wall. The tall doors of a wooden gate open as Theo and Van Gogh get off the coach. Later, a balding physician in spectacles escorts Van Gogh through a garden of shade trees and flowers.
Your brother stated the case most clearly, including the fact that you have voluntarily committed yourself here. Now, you know, mental disease is no different from any other ailment you might have contracted. And these hallucinations you speak of, once you recognize them as the normal accompaniment of disturbances of this sort, whether congenital or acquired, once you accept your state for what it is, half the terror has gone out of it. You do see that, don't you? Beyond that, peace, man, rest, regular routine and agreeable surroundings. You know, in this entire institution at the moment, we've no more than 11 male patients. The food is plain, but healthy, and above all, it is quiet. Yes, yes, it is quiet. Ah, now, here is our superintendent. This is Mr. Vincent van Gogh from Holland. Now, why don't you take Mr. van Gogh to his room?
Van Gogh reaches for his paint case.
No, we'll store those away for you for a little while until you see what you need. Yes. Meanwhile, any time you need me.
Inside, the superintendent accompanies Van Gogh down a high-ceilinged corridor lined with doors. Tall piles of sticks and a few old trunks sit spaced along one wall. Later, the physician dictates a letter.
Mutilated his left ear. In view of the above, and in the light of my examination of the patient, it is my professional opinion that it will be necessary for Mr. Van Gogh to undergo extended observation and treatment.
Theo reads the letter.
Signed, Dr. Perron, dated Saint-Rémy, 9th of May, 1889.
Back at the asylum.
Van Gogh, Vincent, June 14th. The patient's condition appears satisfactory, with continued improvement. He continues to suffer, however, from a condition of chronic inertia, accompanied by symptoms of extreme terror.
In his room, Van Gogh sits motionless. A nun brings a water pitcher.
Would you like me to open the window?
In shadow, Van Gogh's head sways unintelligibly. The nun opens the window, then smiles at the artist.
The view is lovely from here.
Folding her hands delicately at her waist, she steps out into the hall and pulls the door shut. Now, in Dr. Barat's office, a secretary takes dictation.
General condition of patient. There.
He puts down his notes and shakes his head.
Non-violent.
Now, in his room, Van Gogh handles a book.
He has requested that his painting equipment and other personal effects be placed in his room. Request granted.
Van Gogh runs his fingertips over the book's cover. Lifting his deep, thoughtful gaze to the window, he stands to peer through its iron bars. ¶¶ Outside, wild foliage grows high and full around a vast garden closed off by a stone wall. Our view switches to an oil painting of the scene. Cool greens and grays show a cottage beyond the field. Another painting shows a lone figure reaping golden wheat under a large sun.
It's beautiful.
The nun points to the figure.
But the mower, is he imaginary? There's no one in that field.
Oh, that's just any man struggling in the heat to finish his work. That's the figure of death.
It doesn't seem a sad death.
Oh, it's not, sister. It happens in a bright daylight with the sun flooding everything in a light of pure gold.
Van Gogh dabs his brush on his palette, then adds touches of blue to the figure. The nun looks on intently, and they share a smile. Now with the doctor.
It would appear that painting is beneficial, perhaps even necessary, for this patient's well-being. Provided, of course, that he is not permitted to indulge in those excesses of work and emotion that induced his former crisis.
Now, paintings appear one after the other. In one, smooth, rounded clouds done in pastel turquoise and lilac drift above blunt, violet-gray mountains similar in shape. Below, wavy brushstrokes form tall green cypress trees and parched orange grass, suggesting a stiff breeze. Another landscape, painted with short strokes, shows a cypress beside a meandering road. Now we see the painting Starry Night, rendered with hundreds of stiff bar-like strokes. Huge dizzying swirls of white, purple, and blue form clouds over a valley and town. Beside a crescent moon, bold yellow and white circles radiate. Later, as Van Gogh paints outside, he stiffens and falls backward. Gritting his teeth, he crushes a tube of paint in his fist, then leaps face down to the ground.
This latest seizure was the most severe and prolonged that your brother has suffered to date. As a result of constant attention and observation, he is today approaching physical recovery. He now expresses the desire to leave this institution with the intention of taking up residence in the north. And since you support him in this request,
Dr. Barat furrows his brow and leans on his desk.
He will be discharged as soon as he is considered fit to travel.
Now in Paris, Theo's wife Johanna waves cheerfully out a window, then smooths her hair in a mirror. A number of Van Gogh's paintings, including The Reaper, hang on the walls of the elegant parlor. Johanna opens the door.
Vincent!
Hello, Johanna. Good to see you.
It's about time.
Ah, you're just as pretty as I thought you'd be.
But don't you think he looks well, Theo?
He looks better than I do. Where's that baby? When do I get to see him?
He's asleep. But since he's your namesake, you can go in.
Will you try and keep me out? Oh, I brought him a little present. I hope he likes it.
There's your nephew.
Oh, he's a real Van Gogh.
When Wilhelmine was here, she said he looked more like father than anyone.
Oh, there's some of Johanna in him.
Theo leaves them in the nursery, anxiously dabbing his brow.
Vincent!
Van Gogh quavers.
Come sit down.
Theo and Johanna help him into a soft chair.
I'm fine. I was dizzy for a moment.
You're tired.
I'll get you some coffee.
Oh, thanks, Johanna. No, I'm all right, really. It was a long trip.
I left the best news until you got here. Your painting of the Red Vineyard.
Well, what about it?
It sold for 400 francs.
Oh, who bought it?
A painter, Anna Bach. She lives in Brussels.
Oh, that's fine.
I'm glad I...
Van Gogh sees his paintings.
You, I had no idea I'd sent you so much stuff. It certainly adds up. I've hardly given you room to move around.
Well, we still have some space to squeeze a few people in here. As a matter of fact, I was thinking of asking some of your friends over tonight.
Where's Paul?
He's in Brittany. But Lautrec, Pissarro, Bernard, they all want to see you. We ought to celebrate your first sale.
Or would you rather leave it till later?
No, make it tonight. I think the sooner I get settled in Auvers, the better. No, it isn't as if I were going a long ways off. You can all come out and see me on Sunday. Is everything set there with Dr. Gachet? Is he expecting me?
Pissarro made all the arrangements. They were here together last week.
Did they see my new things?
Oh, Gachet got so excited. He wouldn't leave until I'd lent him a couple.
Van Gogh levels his gaze on his brother.
Theo, did you explain to him about me?
Yes, Vincent, I did. He seems very confident.
Oh, thanks, Johanna. Good Dutch cookies. Oh, I don't understand you, Theo. With such fine Dutch cooking in the house, you know, it's about time you put some flesh on those bones of yours.
I'm really very hopeful, Vincent. Dr. Gachet has got a very good name.
Later, says... Van Gogh lunches with Gachet.
See, that's what I have to know.
Will there be warning? Will I have time to...
About those seizures of yours, do you want my opinion? Forget them. Completely. Tell yourself you're finished with them and work boldly and joyously. Vincent, you don't know how lucky you are to have done one painting like that cypress in there or those sunflowers that your brother showed me. I'd give 10 years of my life. Don't you like your wine?
Why, I don't drink much these days. Dr. Gesh...
Yes, for a painter, work is the only medicine there is. And this is the place for it. Come in.
They view Gachet's collection.
Cézanne's. Do you recognize it?
A vase.
He painted it right in this room. And that is this house. He painted that from across the street. Yes, as a matter of fact, there's hardly a canvas here that wasn't done right in this house or within 100 yards of it. Have you seen this Daumier? It's a wonder. Strong, isn't it? Yes, he came here many times, Daumier. He was a strange one. So you see, when I tell you that I understand the artistic temperament, when Manet was dying, they called me in for consultation. They wanted to amputate. I said, no, not for a man like that. But they wouldn't listen.
Lunch is served, Doctor.
Good, Therese. You can put it on the table now. We'll be right out.
Yes, sir.
Dear man, it's a beauty, isn't it? If you like, I'll take you out and show you where he painted it.
We wanted him to join us at our... Oh, look, it's warped.
Is it?
You better have it framed.
I was meaning to take it in. Well, I will. I'll do it tomorrow.
Later, near a Gothic tower, Van Gogh ambles down a stone staircase.
Dear Theo, I've seen Dr. Gachet. He's a pleasant man. He has some good paintings in his house. He wants me to do his portrait, but as for his helping me, I'm afraid we mustn't hope for too much. When the blind lead the blind, don't they both fall in the ditch?
Oh, Mr. Vincent.
Now, in a boarding house.
At what time would you like to have your breakfast in the morning?
Oh, don't worry about that. I'll be out early. Before you get up, just leave some bread and some cold coffee. That'll be fine.
Now, a vivid oil painting of a town garden.
Gachet is right about one thing. This place is beautiful. It tempts me to paint, and the work goes well.
Gachet sits for his portrait.
So much of pain and suffering that I'd have problems enough for one man. But no, I go around founding societies and joining groups. And then this passion of mine for art.
Besides portraits, I've been doing some landscapes. I have a feeling of being surer of my brush than ever before. So I work in haste from day to day, as a miner does who knows he's facing disaster.
Paintings show outlined cottages with thatched roofs, cypress trees done in curling green brushstrokes, a Romanesque church leaning slightly. Now a painting of a square town hall adorned with flags. Outside the real building, two boys run carrying colorful carousel animals. Later, the town square teems with activity. Children dressed in their best clothes watch a puppet show. Other children ride a carousel that is decorated in red, white, and blue. Van Gogh treads slowly by with his painting supplies. With a halting gait, he makes his way past a group of school children and a portly woman with a goat. As he approaches the boarding house, musicians wearing plumed brass helmets jog out from under the striped awning. Inside, several townspeople trickle out past Van Gogh as he finds a table. Out by the town hall, a conductor leads the band. Above them, the mayor steps onto a balcony. Citizens raise glasses of wine. School children cheer. Inside, at his table, Van Gogh begins to cry. As he covers his face, a waitress glances at him on her way out. In the town square, giddy couples dance around. A boy in the band plays trumpet, and a rosy-cheeked old man puffs into a tuba. Inside the boarding house, Van Gogh grimaces and drops his head. As he hides his face, the waitress returns. She sets a glass of wine beside him and leaves. Van Gogh grips the table in agony, knocking the drink to the floor. As his head cranes back, he gnashes his teeth and covers his ears. Laughter and dancing fill the town square. Van Gogh lifts up his reddened face. His dark eyes shift left and right, and he gets up. Trudging outside, he runs a hand through his hair and plods away. Later, in a wheat field, crows fly up from the wheat, flapping wildly around Van Gogh at his easel. Van Gogh flails his arms to shoo them away. As they scatter, he turns to his palette, out of breath. He swirls his brush full of paint, then adds wavy black dashes to the landscape. The unfinished painting shows a road winding to the horizon between two fields of wheat. The dashes resemble the scattering crows. Now Van Gogh feverishly brushes blackish blue over the bright sky. He slathers more paint on with harsh movements.
It's impossible! It's impossible!
A farmer passes by on a horse-drawn cart. He eyes Van Gogh suspiciously, then returns his attention to his reins. Now, Van Gogh stands with his arms hanging loosely at his sides. Behind him, several crows touch down on a mowed field. Under the intense sun, sheaves of wheat lie in large bundles. Van Gogh paces toward a nearby tree. He drops his brush and palette and leans on a low branch. Reaching into his coat pocket, he pulls out a scrap of paper, then writes, "I am desperate. I can foresee absolutely nothing. I see no way out." As he crosses the T, the line trails sharply down off the page. Van Gogh leans heavily against the trunk. He reaches into his other coat pocket, this time pulling out a small pistol. He rests his arm on the low branch and slowly gazes skyward. On the winding road, the farmer's cart rolls toward the horizon. The farmer reins his horse to a stop and scans the fields. Later, Theo sits by an open door and lights a match. Wearing a black coat and cravat, he reaches forward with a somber gaze. Van Gogh lies in bed, smoking his pipe.
I could make a joke of this whole sorry business if it wasn't for the trouble I've caused you. You could at least have gotten back the cost, the paint, the canvases. Doesn't matter. Is the baby really better?
Really? Yes. We were worried about nothing. He was just teething. That was all his trouble.
I only hope he has a quieter soul for my sinking. Sinking.
His pipe trembles in his hand.
Theo.
Theo moves closer to his brother.
I'd like to go home.
Van Gogh stares off, glassy-eyed. His eyes close, the pipe drops from his hand, and his head settles to one side. Theo takes the pipe in his hand and tries to speak. He falls forward, resting his head on Van Gogh's side. His face pinches with grief.
My own brother. My poor, poor brother.
The painting of the Wheat Reaper appears.
It doesn't seem a sad death.
Oh, it's not, sister. It happens in a bright daylight. The sun flooding everything in a light of pure gold.
Our view pulls back, revealing the wall of Van Gogh's work. Haggard-faced self-portraits, his bedroom in oil, sunflowers, starry night, the red-walled night cafe. All done with fiery oranges and reds, smoky blues and greens, and vigorous brushwork. Words appear. The end. This film was described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Boston. Described by Matthew Lane. Read by Margot Stage. Funded by the U.S. Department of Education. For more information about DVS, call toll-free 1-800-333-1203 or write to our email address, dvs@wgbh.org. Credits appear over the large sun from the painting The Reaper. Cast: Kirk Douglas as Vincent Van Gogh, Anthony Quinn as Paul Gauguin, James Donald as Theo Van Gogh, Pamela Brown as Christine, Everett Sloan as Dr. Gachet, Niall McGuinness as Roulin, Noel Purcell as Anton Mauve, Henry Daniel as Theodorus Van Gogh, Madge Kennedy as Anna Cornelia Van Gogh, Jill Bennett as Wilhelmine, Lionel Jeffries as Dr. Perrin, Lawrence Naismith as Dr. Bossman, Eric Pullman as Colbert, Jeanette Stirk as Kay, Tony Jerry as Johanna, Wilton Graff as Reverend Stricker, Isabel Elson as Mrs. Stricker, David Horn as Reverend Peters, Noel Hallett as Commissioner Vandenberg, Ronald Adam as Commissioner DeSchmidt, John Ruddock as DeCrook, Julie Robinson as Rachel, David Leonard as Camille Pissarro, William Phipps as Emil Bernard, David Bond as Surratt.